Welcome, everybody, to the Across the Sky podcast hosted by Lee Enterprises. It's our collection of 70-plus publications across the country, across the sky. And joined with me is my Lee Weather team. We have Sean Sublett over at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Kirsten Lang is at Tulsa World, and Matt Hollander doing his thing in the Midwest. Everybody, it is the middle of January here. The one good thing is that I'm noticing the sun is out just a little bit later now. Matt, what's going on with you? How's it hanging in the Midwest?
Yeah, it's been pretty active. It seems like we get one system to leave and the new system moves in. And then each low pressure system takes a slightly different track. So it keeps you on your toes because you got to see which way this one's going to track and who's going to be on the cold side versus the wet side. And then is the rain going to change over to snow? But I actually just got back from Colorado, where this time of year, there's rarely a question, is it going to be rain or snow? Because I was up in the mountains about an hour and a half west of Denver, my grandmother's place in Silverthorne, Colorado. And oh man, if you're a snow lover, you got to move to Summit County. Boy, do they get a lot of snow. There were piles and piles of it. It's also been a pretty active snowfall season for an area that has been dealing with drought over the last few years. So they're happy to actually have the snow this year. And of course, the economy in that area, all the skiing and the snowboarding that goes on, they need the snow there. And this year, they have a lot of it. And it was a snow lover's paradise. And it was nice to see the snow and see snow falling and not have to worry about forecasting it. Just let it snow.
In my last job, I worked as a consulting meteorologist, and we used to have what we called no touch days where they couldn't bring you on for whatever reason. And there was one storm in New Jersey where it actually snowed like 9 or 12 inches. And I'm sitting home, I'm just on the couch watching the weather channel. I said, this is great. So I know what you're talking about, Matt. Speaking of snow or lack thereof, Sean, my mid-Atlantic weather buddy here, no snow for us.
Yeah, no snow for us still. And you and I do the snow search video. You can see it on any of our Lee Enterprises properties. Every week we do this thing, looking for snow here in the middle Atlantic, looking for snow, still struggling to find any. We've just got rain today through most of Virginia. We've got two more systems coming up this weekend, another one in the middle of next week, but they look like rain. They just look like rain. It just keeps on going, man. It does look like at the end of this month, we do go into a relatively colder pattern. But, we're running about 8th warmest January on record to this point here in Richmond. And I was checking at some of our other properties in Roanoke. It's the 3rd warmest January on record so far. It's not cold. Save for that little spell we had at Christmas, this winter really hasn't been cold.
Who needs Florida when you can just stay at home in the mid-Atlantic? You know, temperatures in the 50s and 60s. You know, there's no white sandy beaches in the 80-degree weather, but I think it's okay. We'll swing it on around to the plains here. We'll go over to Kirsten in Tulsa. Kirsten, what's new and exciting?
You know, not much. It's been just pretty quiet here as well. I mean, temps have been above average. I think there's only one day this month so far where temperatures have actually been below average. So it feels almost like spring, but we are going to be seeing a change next week. We'll be back into the 40s and maybe another chance for some snow, here. So it's just been a very, I don't want to say abnormal, but just kind of a different January with spring-like temps, which I'm not complaining about, but I think it would be fun to see a little bit of some colder weather and some snow while we're in it.
Great segue into today's topic, Kirsten, because we are talking about snow and like feet of snow here. We are going to be talking about all the snow that happened in Buffalo over November and December here, specifically what happened in December with what is being dubbed the blizzard of 2022. And we're going to talk to our guests about this in a second, but it's either the worst or the second worst storm in historical record for the city of Buffalo here. It was a combination of a lake effect storm, an ice storm, and a windstorm all at once. Started on December 23rd when rain changed to snow. Travel bans in effect. The Buffalo airport was shut down for days. Wind gusts were in the 70s. And this lasted through the 24th into Christmas itself. You weren't going anywhere for Christmas. You were going home if you were home for Christmas. And that was about it. We talked about 43 inches of snow at the Buffalo airport. Unfortunately, 25 people passed away And really, to give us a good perspective on this, as well as the feet of snow that happened in November, we have Don Paul here. Don Paul is a legendary meteorologist in the Buffalo area. He's quote unquote retired, but he's still working just as hard. He was a broadcast meteorologist at mostly WIBV, but also WGRZ in Buffalo from 1984 until he retired in 2016. But since then, he's actually been working at our sister property at the Buffalo News, writing multiple articles a week on weather and climate. He was plenty busy during the blizzard as well, remains as a fill-in in WIBV. And my favorite part of his biography, born and raised in New Jersey. And not only that, he went to the best university entire planet, Rutgers University, where he was the news director of the historic WRSU radio station, also a captain in the U.S. Army Reserve. We appreciate your service. And thanks for coming on, Don Paul.
Well, thank you. And I think what you just said about Rutgers entitles you to 2 years of no alumnus donations necessary.
They keep calling me, Don. I'm sure they call you.
Yeah,
too.
once you give, they never forget.
And that is true.
We have to admit we wouldn't be where we are without them. So, and that goes for everybody here. You know, I know Sean is Penn State, and
they still beg me for money too, buddy.
I'm sure. Half of my retired friends from the National Weather Service are Penn State guys, and they keep inviting me to come and visit when Rutgers comes to State College, and I'm afraid it's going to be too unpleasant a sight for me. But, you know, we all owe a lot to our schools that enabled us to pursue these careers.
Yeah, and in all seriousness, there's not many meteorology schools in the country, so no matter where you go, you know, we are very appreciative that it gives us a chance to learn and become the people who we are. So, Don, you know, we're going to talk again about the December storm mostly. We'll talk a little bit about November. But the first thing I want to do is if you could paint a picture for the people here of the geography of the Buffalo area and how it pertains to lake effect snow.
When I tell people the precision that's necessary to have an accurate forecast for most lake effect events as to which communities and sometimes which parts of which communities are going to be impacted, they're amazed. And when I got here in 1984, the models which we were using back then were very primitive. They didn't seem primitive in 1984, but the surface winds, the direction could be off by 20, 30 degrees. And the northern half of Erie County, which includes the city of Buffalo, is the most densely populated part of our viewing area. Notice I keep saying viewing area because I'm still doing some television. And if you are counting on a surface wind direction from 250 degrees on the face of a compass, that typically takes the band into downtown Buffalo and out to the airport. And depending on how well organized it is, it can go to the next county to the northeast and occasionally reach Rochester. If you were counting on 250 and you get 240, that will miss the city of Buffalo altogether unless there's some widespread synoptic snow around the lake effect and get the densely populated town that I live in. Amherst, New York is the largest suburb in upstate New York, north of Yonkers. It's about 125,000 people. So if you're off by 5 or 10 degrees in wind direction, you will warn or not warn the wrong 100,000 plus people. Then occasionally you get a storm that's a hybrid between synoptic, the widespread stuff, and embedded lake effect. We had the blizzard of 1985 here, my first winter, which was a ferocious full tilt blizzard. But this one, by the way, just to update you, the final loss of life in Western New York is 44. It went up quite a bit, and the total snow at the airport was 51 inches. But as all of us, not just me, were saying days in advance, it's not going to be the amount as much as the impact, because this, in one terrible sense, was a pretty easy call. We could see it days in advance. all of the models were favoring a true, and it's an overused phrase, but we all know what it means, a true bomb cyclone driving those winds, and that the winds would be primarily, once that cold front went by, primarily out of the southwest for the teeth of the blizzard. And all of that verified. In fact, the lake effect sometimes lags a few hours behind a cold front till the cold air deepens. And in this event, it kicked in less than an hour after the front cleared Buffalo, maybe 30 minutes. And it became ferocious very quickly. And you were saying before I came on how one of you were saying how it can be, Matt, how it can be fun to watch the snow and not have to worry about forecasting it. And this storm was so ferocious that even though I was working those days only for the Buffalo News, I was on social media constantly because that was my way of not being able to keep my big mouth shut. And so I did something I seldom do. I put in all caps, stay home. This is a life-threatening storm. And I tend, like I suspect most of you, to try to avoid hype. But this one merited all the hype. And it was, in terms of loss of life, the blizzard of 77, when I was working in Wichita, that killed 29 people, most of whom froze to death in their cars. And that was a ground blizzard. They only estimate about a foot of snow fell. But this one had both ground blizzard characteristics from the roaring winds, but true blizzard from falling snow as well. And I think the Buffalo Airport had 13 consecutive hours of less than a 16th mile visibility. And I've never seen that, not for that length of time. So it was, in the worst possible way, historic. And, since then, there's been a lot of gnashing of teeth over, despite the advance warning and despite our political leaders warning people to get everything done on Thursday, the day before, we still lost a lot of people who ventured out, some because their homes had no power and they had no food and they wanted to see if they could make it to a grocery store. And quite a number of people were found frozen to death on the streets of Buffalo. So it was pretty awful. And I was here with my dogs. My wife was visiting her little grandchildren in South Carolina. And I was thinking, if we lose power, it's going to be the dogs and me in the living room where we have a fireplace. And that's it. So even as an individual, apart from being a meteorologist, it was pretty scary. The winds were just, there were times where you could hear your roof just kind of creaking from the force. Hey, all right, that was a long answer to your question.
Yeah, well, Don, Sean down here in Richmond, and to follow up on that, I mean, I know a lot of us are used to in the weather business, talking about lake effect snow, and we have a general broad view handle on how it happens. You got to get the wind going across the longest fetch of the lake as possible. But, you being there in it and understanding the nuances of a 10 degree shift in the wind from 240 degrees to 250 degrees and where that band shows up. I mean, you're deep in it. Can you talk a little bit about a couple of other things? One, explain to people why the wind was so bad in this particular event from a synoptic aspect, if you'd like. And two, how long would you say, because you touched on this before about 1/16th visibility for more than 12 hours, how long was it truly life-threatening where it's 40, 50 miles an hour? And if you go out there, you truly risked your life.
Well, on Friday the 23rd, it was truly life-threatening in the city of Buffalo. The city has about 278,000 people. It was once a much larger city. And also an immediate southern suburb, Lackawanna, where the steel plant used to be, the Bethlehem Steel Plant. And then late that night, and I could see it happening before I went to sleep, the band was starting to shift a little farther north. And when the sun tried to come up the next morning, the dogs were all, we hadn't lost power at my house. We lost it for 2 minutes, literally. I moved the shade and couldn't see the tree next to our deck. And I said, oh, it move north or right. And all that day, had I had to go out, and the only time I went out was to clear paths for the dogs to do their business, it would have felt life-threatening. And what happened with winds of that force, due to the central pressure and the track of the low, historically, climatologically, was perfect to get the strongest winds coming up the full length of Lake Erie. The full fetch is what sailors call it. And the wind actually can accelerate over a smooth surface. The lake had no ice on it. It had a little bit of ice when the blizzard ended. And now the lake temperature as of yesterday was back up from, it had dropped to 32 during the blizzard. It's back up to 37. So given the right circumstances, our lake effect season is by no means over. But you couldn't have a more ideal conditions for synoptic winds of that strength. And there's a New York State Mesonet site in this town where the steel mill used to be, Lackawanna, that had a gust of 79. The airport had a peak gust of 72, but many gusts over 60. And that was for hours. And, you know, there were people who were so desperate who went out because their homes had dropped to the upper 30s and low 40s. And they hadn't been, you know, there are a lot of people in certain parts of the city who don't have a car and were really not fully cognizant of everything that was being warned. And even if they were, didn't have the ability to really stock up a whole bunch before the blizzard hit. And these people felt desperate enough to go out and then became totally disoriented because the visibility for a number of those hours at the airport, I don't remember the exact number, was actually zero. I mean, they didn't put down 0.13 or six. It was, and the airport was closed from Friday until the following Wednesday. And I'm in my 39th year here. It's never been closed for a length of time like that, anything close to that. Even so, it was truly life-threatening. And the few times I had to go out to shovel a path for the dogs, you couldn't exhale into that wind. You had to turn around, and I couldn't see the, and the wind was so strong that the dendrite flakes, billions of them, obviously every second, were being fractured, tumbling it, you know, smashing into one another. You normally think, all of you, well, the temperature dropped from about 40 at 6 a.m. to the single digits by early Friday evening. Normally, when you have air that cold, the snow tends to be lower density and blows around easily. Well, it blew around easily, but the drifts that formed when you tried to shovel them felt like you were shoveling totally water-laden snow. The airport water equivalent, I think, was 3.4 inches. I asked the Sioux at the Buffalo office what the actual average ratio was. And, you know, I would have thought with temperatures like that, it would have been like 20 to 1, maybe 25 to 1. It was 13 point something to 1. And this, I figured, well, when it's over, I don't have to go to work, really. I'll just shovel the drifts a little at a time. And I realized when it was over and I started to shovel, at my age, I've never had a heart attack, but I realized I just couldn't do it. And I posted on Facebook that people in my demographic hire a kid or wait until you can get a plow to your driveway. And some nice friend of my wife's, he teaches at a Buffalo school, he had a tractor and he came by that Tuesday and did a fantastic job for me. There's no way I could have gotten out, but I was one of the the very lucky ones. I had plenty of food and kept power. But there were people who lost power for several days. And just imagine being a line person, I guess he's a lineman. And they were National Grid, one of the two major utilities here. They were restoring power to some people in the teeth of the blizzard. I don't even know how those guys got up there to do that. I wouldn't want to even think of doing that. You know, I thought if you lose power, you're done for several days. But there were quite a few who got their power restored too.
Going to take a brief break here. We're going to come over to you on the other side. We'll talk to you more about the historic Buffalo Blizzard of 2022, as well as that big lake effect snow last November. You're listening to the Across the Sky podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Across the Sky podcast. We are talking everything snow, everything Buffalo, and with Mr. Buffalo Weather himself, Don Paul here, who's been a longtime Buffalo meteorologist, now works for our sister publication part-time at the Buffalo News, writing articles and columns here. I'm going to toss it over to Matt. Matt had a question for Don here as we go around our little weather podcast table here. So Matt, take it away.
Yeah, Don, we've been talking about the December snowstorm, but it's amazing that one could almost overshadow what happened in November and what a big national story that was. And I want you to kind of compare the two storms. And why was the one in December? Why do we see the death toll with that one that we did not with the November snowstorm, which from a national perspective, for somebody not living in Buffalo, seemed like a big story, a big event on its own?
Well, it was, and it would have been even without football. But then when it became a national story that the Bills had to move that game to a neutral territory because it was impossible to play it in Orchard Park, that made it all the bigger story. And then people began hearing regularly 80 inches. And one of the spotters is a trained spotter and has always been reliable. So I don't think there was any hype in that measurement. Plus, the neighboring Buffalo South towns had amounts that matched up very well with that. So that was accurate. And the big difference is December was a roaring, deadly blizzard, where that one occurred with relatively, there was wind and blowing snow, but not an extreme, nowhere near blizzard criteria. And that makes all the difference in the ability for plows to get out there. The plows had to stop all plowing during the teeth of the December blizzard because the drivers couldn't see a thing. And then you had hundreds of abandoned cars so that even when they could see, they couldn't get down a lot of city streets. They eventually were able to get the main highways open, but that was after the teeth of the blizzard had finally moved south of the city and began to dissipate, where the incredible amounts in the November storm were not manageable all the time. But again, you weren't getting frequent gusts to over 35 miles an hour. And that makes all the difference. And you weren't getting the fracturing of the dendrites. And I had to be reminded of that. We have a really good forecast office, and there's a lead forecaster, and I'm going to give him a plug, John Hitchcock at the Buffalo National Weather Service, who commented to me on Facebook about how the winds we're anticipating could cause a very different nature to the snow as it drifts compared to typical very cold air snow. And he'd seen some papers on that. I found a paper in a Japanese journal in English, which was done in the 60s, which had ocean effect snow with fractured dendrites. So this was known a long time, but it was barely in my mind. I remember we had an event back in the late 80s where it looked like it would be an all-out lake effect storm. We had super strong winds. In that storm, though, we had something which you all know, speed shear, where the winds were super strong at the surface, but then the wind speeds varied with increased altitude tremendously. You can, if you get too much change in direction as you go up to 5 and 10,000 feet, that'll tear a band apart. If you get too much change in wind speed as you go up, that disrupts the band too. And that's what happened that time in the 80s. And back on Tuesday before the blizzard, you could already see in the global models how deep the storm was going to be. I was beginning to wonder, well, are the winds going to tear these bands apart? Well, that didn't happen because we didn't have speed shear and we didn't have directional shear. Everything was aligned to the maximum. You were getting 3 inches per hour, we think, because when it's snowing that hard, you know how hard it is to measure for hour after hour after hour. So that for ferocity, there was no comparison between the two storms.
Don, I want to ask a little bit too about, coverage on these types of events. I know you weren't working full time this past year, but you have, of course, in the past, been a chief at one of these stations when, you know, these types of events come through. And tell us a little bit about what coverage looks like with that when you're trying to, you know, rotate your staff around and make sure everybody is rested, but yet still, you know, updating the public on what's going on.
Well, I'll say compared to Tulsa, I have a friend who's in Tulsa who says he'd be scared to forecast lake effect. And I worked in Wichita just 1 year, and thankfully it was not a really bad tornado year. But lake effect, as bad as it can get, gives the meteorologists and the team time to think and breathe. And it's not a matter where every second counts. Now, WIVB, my old station, had something this time that they didn't have in all the years I worked there. They had cots so that some staff could sleep at the station, because WIVB is at the north end of Buffalo, and there's only one distant hotel. Whereas downtown Buffalo, where the other two stations are, there are some hotels. So a number of people had to sleep at the station. And you know, one night, Christmas night, when the storm had wound down, one of my colleagues, Mike Doyle, was anchoring at 6 o'clock because there was no anchor, news anchor, who could make it to the station. Everyone was snowed in. In November 2014, we had a huge lake effect event, which affected the Buffalo South Towns and extreme South Buffalo. North Buffalo, where WIVB is, we had 4 inches. South Buffalo had 48 inches. And then when you got into the Buffalo South Towns, when you went far enough out, there were quite a few measurements of 7 feet. So we were able to manage things pretty easily at the station. I was working with meteorologist Todd Santos, and we didn't need to sleep at the station. And that also was a pretty well forecast event. And we still occasionally get events that aren't well forecast, but they're not usually the whoppers. The models are doing better and better over time. So my biggest plus dealing with lake effect versus severe convection, and we get a little of it here, is it's less stressful. It wears you down, but you don't have that awful feeling when you can't get a message out and you know there's a tornado almost certainly on the ground in a populated area. You've no doubt been through that. And you look pretty young for someone who's been through that, but I just was very grateful in Wichita that we didn't have a bad tornado here, because I didn't know how little I knew until after I got out there. You got to know in any science, and it's certainly in ours, the limits of your knowledge. Have respect for all the vast seas of information you don't know. I didn't really know what I was walking into when I got to Wichita. The only time I saw radar in college, we took a field trip to the old U.S. Weather Bureau at 30 Rock. You know, now they're out in Suffolk County. And we took a tour of that office with the old WSR 57 radar, got to see it for a couple of hours, and that was it. So I was not really up on radar when I got to Wichita. So if someone said you can shave 20 years off and start over again, I'm not picking a tornado prone area.
I understood it. I remember you were telling me on the phone about your trip to 30 Rock back when you were at Rutgers. It's just quite amazing. I think that radar you were saying is still there, even though it's not in use. It's still there on top of 30 Rock.
The radome is still up there, 66 stories up. I don't know if they took the antenna out, but a friend of mine who's in chief of meteorology operations for the NBC owned stations, Nate Johnson, he told me, here's a picture. And he sent me a picture. And I was amazed that it's still up there. Maybe they were afraid dismantling it, some of it could fall to the street and kill a few people. So they said, just leave it.
I bet you those kind of safety rules are a little bit different in New York now than it was back in the 50s and 60s there. Don, let's talk about that December blizzard in comparison with the blizzard of 1977. That's really the bellwether, or has been the bellwether storm for really 40 plus years in Buffalo. And then this comes along. Can you compare and contrast the two? And I don't know if you want to say which one was more significant or not. If you do, I'll turn it over to you. But just at the very least, explain the differences between the two and how people reacted to them.
Well, the blizzard of 77 was not a really well forecast event. Now, there's a myth that the National Weather Service completely missed it. And when I got here in 84, I didn't have any of the data that had been put out by, not the data, the special statements put out on January 27th, 1977. Well, when I got to WGRZ for that 3-year stretch, a previous meteorologist somehow got printouts from the Service A teletype, the pilot reports, and also the plain English special statements. The Weather Service was warning the night before that things were going to go drastically downhill late in the morning, but they were not forecasting the ferocity of the winds. And the pilot reports were saying, you know, bright blue skies, we can see, you know, snow on blowing on ground. I don't remember the exact phrases they used. So that caught many, many people really off guard. There were no meteorologists on Buffalo television at that time. The weather people were all untrained. They may be good broadcasters, but I don't think they understood everything that the Weather Service was putting out. And so we lost 29 people. And generally, you know, a few weeks ago, I was on the PBS NewsHour, and they gave me 4.5 minutes in an interview. And they asked me, is that okay? And I said, are you kidding? That's more than I ever got for any weathercast. But one of the points I was asked about was, what do you think this is going to do for Buffalo's image? And it's a point of concern, because lots of people make fun of Buffalo for its snow. But in terms of our warming climate, a lot of us have been advertising how sometime long, probably long after I'm gone, I expect some return migration from the Southwest to the Great Lakes and parts of the Northeast because of our unlimited water supply. In Buffalo, we don't deal with so-called mega droughts or wildfires. Very rare to have a serious tornado, and of course, no rising sea levels, that we're kind of a haven from the worst of climate change. Not that we're not undergoing it, but the extreme impacts are less likely here than on the Atlantic seaboard and so many other places in Southern California and the Southwest. But now this blizzard got so much fully deserved coverage as a human traumatic tragedy that I can imagine someone who's considering relocating a business to Western New York, I don't think I want to go there. You know, it's amazing how Floridians love to make fun of Buffalo weather. Well, this was a human tragedy, but over the decades, the impacts and the loss of life due to weather events is simply no comparison with the impacts of hurricanes in Florida or in especially Louisiana. I don't know if they make fun of us as much in Louisiana, but I think this is going to have it's going to be a lasting memory for someone who might have considered coming back up here. You know, we have a pretty well-trained labor force and all that jazz, and hydroelectric power is available and all that jazz. But I think besides the real trauma and loss of life, there may be some long-term slowdown in development. Buffalo's population for the first time in quite a few decades actually went up in the last census. It had been going, like Detroit, it had been going down, 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 and it actually went up. And by more than 5 people, by the way, it wasn't insignificant.
It's not the new Buffalo Bills roster coming into Western New York, is it?
Well, it could be. You know, there's no overestimating, speaking of ferocity, the devotion of the fans here. You know, I grew up with the Giants, and that first Super Bowl in 1991, I was at a party, and I have to admit, I was kind of rooting for the Giants. I mean, Bill Sims was out with an injury.
That's all right. And it's fine.
It started snowing pretty hard here in Buffalo during the second half. And you know how that game ended, wide right. And I waited till I was about 5 blocks away where I parked to say, yes! I just stayed quiet during the game.
It's okay. I'm in Eagles territory. I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I'm okay sharing my allegiance there too. Also,
you take your life in your hands.
Sorry, Don. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was saying you take your life in your hands. I was one of the only Western New Yorkers who admired Tom Brady, but that's because my older daughter went to Michigan, and in her freshman year, he was a senior. And so I got to see him play. And so that was, I was a daddy, you know, taking her baby sister, having these great football weekends in Ann Arbor. That was, at the time, divorced daddy nostalgia. I wasn't about to be a Tom Brady hater.
Right. I gotcha. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I actually became a Ravens fan when they beat the Giants in the 2000 Super Bowl. Sorry to rub it in there, Don.
That's all right. I wasn't that impressed with the 2000 Giants.
Maybe this year we'll see what happens. Although we'll have a new this episode's coming out right after that game, so we'll see what happens on January 21st over in Philadelphia. But Don, thank you again for the time. We appreciate it, and we'll be happy to have you come back another time. Thanks for being here with us on the Across the Sky podcast.
All right. I'd love to. This was just a blast to do.
Wonderful.
I had a lot of fun with you folks.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to take another short break here. We're going to hear from Tony Rice with our astronomy report. And on the other side, we will wrap up this edition of the Across the Sky podcast.
Looking beyond the atmosphere, here's Tony Rice with your astronomy outlook.
Something interesting happened with comet C22E3ZTF over the weekend. It sprouted a third tail. A comet's primary tail is made up of dust and gases that are ejected as it grows closer to the sun. This creates a thin atmosphere around the comet called a coma. The coma is stripped off by the solar wind, creating a tail that can stretch for millions of miles. If that comet survives long enough to enter the inner solar system where we are, somewhere around the orbit of Mars, the amount of ultraviolet light reaching the comet really increases, and that ramps up the ionization of carbon monoxide, which glows blue as it trails behind the comet in a distinct second tail. This blue ion tail of charged particles, it follows magnetic lines and the solar winds, causing it to, unlike the dust tail, point directly away from the sun. On rare occasions, a third tail, paradoxically pointing towards the sun, can sprout on comets as they get even closer. This is a trail of much larger neutrally charged particles, and we're talking about a millimeter in size here. But is this tail really pointing towards the sun? This is actually an optical illusion, the result of viewing as Earth passes through the plane of the comet's orbit. Comet C22-ZTF is expected to brighten a bit more as it draws closer to Earth through the end of January. That anti-tail could even become more prominent as well. That's your astronomy outlook. Follow me at RTP Hokey for more spacey stuff like this.
Thanks, Tony, for the astronomy report, as always. We're always very happy to have him on here. So it was great to have Don on. I mean, these are the kind of things I think we like to do with these podcasts, and we want to do more of when we do have those big weather events happening. Grab someone from the local area, especially someone who's been around for as long as Don, to come on and talk about it and put it in perspective. And I think he did just that.
We've all seen snow, but I think, you know, for me, it is so difficult. We see the pictures, but to really try to put yourself in that frame of mind. I mean, what he talked about from nightfall to the end of the next day, when it was just consistently a 30, 40, 50 mile an hour wind, snow falling, visibility near zero, just not even safe to walk out the door for 3 or 4 minutes. That's really hard to imagine unless you've lived through it. And he has seen a lot there in Western New York for sure. So bringing in that perspective is just so, so useful.
And the thing that bothers me about this December storm was the death toll. You know, an event that we saw coming, you know, and we've had multiple events like this over the last few years. You know, sometimes there's some unexpected weather, but to be honest, the forecasts are getting so good, there's fewer and fewer unexpected weather events. And rare is the time now where there's a big event that can cause a loss of life that's not forecasted, where there's not some warning at least 24 hours in advance. Like, there's potential for something big that could be life-threatening. And that was the case this time. And yet we still dealt with the high death toll. And it's just a shame. It's like, what can we do to really somehow the message is still getting lost with these big events. And, you know, maybe is it because, you know, people think, oh, it's just snow. How can snow be dangerous? But in this case, it wasn't just the snow like we saw in the November event, but the wind and the cold. And again, it kind of comes back to being able to, you know, get the total message, just like when it comes to hurricanes, breaking down the impacts. And it's not just one part of the storm, like the wind when it comes to hurricanes, but the storm surge and the amount of rain that's coming. I think when you get one of these systems that has so many components, sometimes it's just a little overwhelming for people and the message gets lost. So I think we almost have to just get focus in and focus on each of the threats one at a time to make sure it is clear to people all that's coming. And it's not just snow, but there was wind and cold with this storm as well, because I think that might have been the difference.
If there's ever, you know, job security, I think for us in our business, it's events like this, because your app can only tell you so much. But then whenever you have an event, of course, you know, like Matt said, with these other types of parameters that you maybe don't think about, when you look at your app and it says, oh, 100% chance of snow and it's going to be windy, you know, I mean, you need somebody to really deliver that message. So, you know, it just, I think, reiterates how important having meteorologists are still. You know, whenever you have an event, you need to get that word out to the public and let them know what's actually happening.
Yeah, the perspective is so vital. I think there's a lot of optimism bias. If somebody has recently lived in Buffalo, you know, they weren't there for 77 and they've never experienced the event that just happened, they don't have a frame of reference. Oh, it's never been this bad before, so it's not going to be that bad. It's not as bad as they say it's going to be. And then like, oh, wow, actually it was. I got caught off guard. And now, unfortunately, people have died. So I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done on messaging to be sure that people understand messaging. Because on some level, we could just tell people till we're blue in the face, and some people will still ignore us. So there's a lot of social science work I still think needs to be done. And that's why I'm glad we have social scientists who are working in this field for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think too, I mean, part of it, and it's been like this for 12 years now, is media fragmentation. There's so many ways to get weather information that, you know, or just news in general, that people might actually, you know, if they keep seeing four headlines of the same thing, they might get a little, I don't know, used to like, oh, I, you know, this is my fourth headline of heavy rain or heavy snow and wind. And it might not feel like that big of a deal, or, you know, depending on the sources that you're going to, might not accurately portray what's happening. That is, again, where the meteorologists come in, but we're only in so many places at one time. So either way, good discussion. Definitely more discussion for the future here or there. Speaking of snow, that could be what our next guest and topic is going to be next week, depending on what our friend Punxsutawney Phil says for Groundhog's Day. Will we see six more weeks of winter or not? That is the basis for our next episode of the Across the Sky podcast. We are going to talk to Joe Murgo, who is a longtime broadcast meteorologist in Pennsylvania, always goes to the Groundhog Day events in February here. And we're going to chat with him about his experiences with Phil and maybe what we can expect as we go into 2023. So we'll wrap it up for now with the Across the Sky podcast. For Sean, Matt, Kirsten, and I, we will talk to you next Monday. Take care, everybody.